on Distinct Nostalgia, an exclusive, as Ashley meets the person who was the Flumps. Do you remember them? They were these little round, fluffy, furry animated creatures who appeared to live in the woods. There was Pootle, Perky and Posy, Marflump, Parflump, Grandad Flump, who played a Flumpet, and the stories were enchanting. Gay Soper voiced all the characters and told the story. We caught up with her while on a break from starring in The Mousetrap in London. And the Flumps had a brilliant theme tune. Da-dum, da-dum, da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-da-dum.
Quite special talking to you, really, because although there were only 13, I think it was 13 episodes of The Flumps, I remember as a little boy them being on constantly during my childhood. They were there all the time, these little creatures, these little characters.
Oh, well...
Where did they come from? What were they supposed to be?
Yes, that's a really good question. The lady who wrote the script is called Julie Holder. I never actually met her, but she was a housewife with several children. And to amuse them, she used to write little stories. And she started writing these stories about the Flumps. So it was entirely her own invention. And one of her children took one of these stories into school one day, and the teacher heard this story and thought it was just delightful. And her husband was, in fact, I think, a BBC executive or something to do with television and radio. And so she said to this little chap, could I take your mummy's script? Because I think my husband would be interested in doing something with this. And that's how it all began. So then, obviously, all these episodes were written. And originally, they wanted to have June Whitfield playing all the roles, but she was busy, not surprisingly. And I was with the same agent, so it was an independent film producer called David Yates. So he then said to my agent, have you got any other clients who are good at voices and telling stories? And I was a very busy voiceover artist, as well as being a theatre actress and television actress. And so she suggested me, and I went and met David Yates in the studio, his own studio, where he showed me all these little round fluffy things with wiggly arms and legs. And he said, okay, well, let's sort of try out some different accents and different sorts of voices for these are the characters. So we had a go at various different accents, and the one that won was a sort of nebulous Midlands accent, really, or perhaps Northern, I don't really know. You probably would know better than I, but you know, if you talk a bit like that, it's slightly Northern, isn't it?
It does sound, I think they were Northern. I think they were sort of...
slightly Northern.
Yeah, I think they were quite... couldn't quite work out whether they were the Yorkshire or Lancashire, where they were a mixture of the two, probably.
Well, probably was. Perhaps it's on the border between the two. But yeah, whatever happened, they did not want my own accent.
Right.
Because it's deeply unfashionable. It's sadly still deeply unfashionable. So all voiceover artists had to be, we have to specialise in different accents.
So where were you from then? What's your real accent?
Originally I grew up in Surrey.
Right, okay.
But I'm so old that when I was at school, everybody was taught to speak like this.
Right, yeah.
It was the standard English because... if you spoke it, it meant you were understood all over the world by people from every possible background. And therefore, it was the most practical and useful way to speak English. But I know that's gone. That's a deeply old-fashioned thing to say now. So somebody will probably throw metaphorical stones at me for saying it.
You were introduced to these little characters, and what was your original first impression of them? They're quite fascinating.
Oh, I thought they were absolutely adorable.
Yeah.
And we just had to, obviously, from reading the stories, one worked out the characters. Mother Flumper, a typical, in those days, a typical mother, warm and loving, friendly, supportive, hardly ever angry.
Usually doing the cooking. Usually doing,
all the cooking. Yes, doing all the cooking. And then Father had the shed at the end of the garden where he did all his woodwork, and he used to build shelves and cupboards and things for the household. And then, of course, there was Grandfather Flump. And Grandfather was very, very old, with a quavery voice. And he used to play the flumpet. And that trumpet was played by somebody who was very famous in his time, called George Chisholm. And he was a very famous trumpeter. And they got him in to record that signature tune and all the little bits in between. And I was in the studio when he recorded them as well, and he was just such a lovely man.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, the main character, of course, was Pootle.
Well, everyone thinks he was the main one. I don't think he's any more main than anyone else, but I think he was everyone's favourite.
Yes, yes. Well, maybe also because he was the young one, or the child, or whatever. I suppose the kids,
yes,
identified with him, I suppose. In,
yeah,
that sense.
maybe. But I chose that voice based on something when I was in Godspell, which was in 1971 and 72. In the cast was a lovely lady called Julie Covington. Some of your listeners may remember. She was the original Evita before it ever went on stage.
Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's it. And anyway, she used to do funny voices in the dressing room. And one of her voices was like that because it was as if she'd got adenoids.
Ah.
And she used to talk like that. And I thought, actually, that's a really lovely accent and voice for a little baby who's always snuffly. He's probably got cold after cold after cold.
I was about to ask you that Pootle always sounds as though he's got a cold,
yeah,
basically.
He all got a cold, so he's talking through his, you know, he's sort of all bunged up. And so that was how Pootle came about. And everyone's always said to me that they love Pootle the best. And he did have some lovely lines to say, didn't he? Because he didn't understand things and he got things mixed up. And I can't remember an example now, but I'm sure you can find them in probably every episode.
Yeah, he misinterprets things, or he has these sort of ways of saying something slightly different to what it should be,
yes,
and that kind of thing, mixing things up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it was very, at the end of the day, I suppose. Again, you know, more than anything, you don't want to overdo this because at the end of the day it was children's entertainment, but they were quite educational as well, weren't they?
I suppose they were, yes, because, yes, you'd keep it under your hat, for instance, which meant, you know, don't blurt everything out. Yes, I suppose they were, yes. And then Grandfather thinks they've forgotten his birthday. And he gets very upset. Of course, they haven't forgotten his birthday at all. But I suppose that was quite a nice lesson that for children, that it's not just children who like having a birthday, but everybody does, actually.
And there were episodes. I mean, obviously, it was only 13 episodes, but one of the memorable ones, of course, was the balloon one, where it talks about blowing up balloons and what you're supposed to do,
yes,
with that kind of thing. You know, that was quite,
yes,
nice.
And the songs were so lovely. And I can't actually remember who wrote the songs. I should know, shouldn't I? But I don't.
But how... Because you were the voice for the whole thing, so you had to do the,
yeah,
narration. You also had to make sure you altered your voice to make sure you made the characters believable and different.
Yeah.
And you did the songs as well. And these weren't... They weren't like five-minute things. This was 15 minutes, wasn't it? It was quite a lot to do, really.
Yes. Well, we recorded the music quite separately, because we had to go into a special studio for that, because there was... Well, in fact, I think, if I remember this correctly, the orchestra was in fact an Italian orchestra and had been... It had recorded all the, as it were, backtracks for the songs in Italy. I think it was a question of saving money. So then I had to go into another studio with those backtracks of the orchestra and sing my song along with the with that backing. So it was definitely, and every session in the studio recording the actual stories was at least an hour, hour and a half, because you have to, you can't read it straight through. You know, sometimes you'll read a line or two, and then they'll say, "Okay, hang on a minute. Can you redo that? Can we have more emphasis on that word, or a little bit less on that, or look, this is a bit more of a question than you've made it." You know, all those sorts of things. You get those notes, and then you go back and they splice it all together. I don't quite know what they do these days, of course.
But there are quite a few characters. I mean, there wasn't masses of characters, but obviously there was father and mother and Pootle and Posy and Perkin and Grandad. So there were quite a few of them. How did you... And they all had the same accent, really. How difficult was it to keep that going in terms of, you know, making sure they all sounded distinctive?
I don't think it was very difficult. I think once or twice I'd say, "Oh, sorry, I'm doing the wrong voice," you know. Then we'd have to wipe that bit and go back and get that bit right. That would be one of the reasons why it would take so long, I suppose, to do an episode. But I mean, obviously, I am an actress, so I envisage the character in my head speaking the lines, you know, just like somebody who reads books. You know, Gordon Griffiths, who's the most famous book reader in the world, I think, he does different voices and things, and you know, you do become very expert at getting it right.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to get them on there. Yeah.
Look.
We all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
I
gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't
lie.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
And Ashley's chat with Gay Soper will continue after this look ahead to what's in store on Distinct Nostalgia over the next few months.
We're kicking off a whole new season of Gems from Distinct Nostalgia, as we remember the great TV and films of the past with the people who were there. Here's just some of the delights we have in store for early 2024.
It was a comedy about language. It wasn't really a comedy about race or religion or stereotypes. It was a sitcom built on puns and mispronunciation of the English language. And it put Barry back on top, you know, from somebody who had been a star to go in, you know, and being on the Dole. He was now back in front of 18 million viewers every week.
He was a huge TV star for years. Ashley talks to Daniel Ward, the writer of a new book about the intriguing life of Barry Evans. And we're reuniting three of the original cast of Mind Your Language.
Hello, I'm George Camilla, and I play Giovanni, the Italian student.
Hello, I'm Françoise Pascal, and I play Daniel Favre.
Hello, my name is Pixen Lim. I play Chung Su Li, who was a student in China and great follower of Chairman Mao.
Staying with ITV, we're also remembering the classic late-night sitcom Shelley.
The way he talked about going and signing on was the way everybody wanted to talk about going and signing on. You know, nobody really wants to do it. Everybody's quite grateful to get the money, but they don't want to have to do lots of interviews for jobs that they're overqualified for. And so he said everything that everybody wanted to.
Belinda Sinclair gives us an insight into working with Hal Bennett and Josephine Tewson. And we're back at 165 Eaton Place as we go upstairs, downstairs.
So they were absolutely scrupulous about period detail. On rare occasion, they did get something wrong. They would get hundreds of letters saying they would never have put that up on that particular source or whatever it was. There was painstaking about all of that.
Jacqueline Tong played Daisy in the classic period drama, and she'll be recalling great memories of her legendary co-stars. Veteran actor Melvin Hayes joins us from his home on the Isle of Wight with some great anecdotes from over 70 years in show business.
The Monday morning, we got phone calls saying, don't come to Yorkshire, stay exactly where you are. The rest of it was canned. And they paid us six episodes on all our expenses. And it was voted the worst TV series ever made.
And then we're chatting behind the camera with prolific TV director Royston Mayo, whose credits include This Is Your Life, Opportunity Knocks, Tommy Cooper and Les Dawson.
They did His Life in America and then gave him his book and said, hey, Andrews, this is your life. It's also your show. That was a wonderful line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And George Layton talks candidly about his friend Richard O'Sullivan, as well as his own writing credits.
I wrote 13 Robinsoness, and a Christmas episode. I mean, I didn't create that series, but I did it with the same passion as if I had done, which got up Tony Britton's nose a bit. You know, I don't think he didn't like me coming with my notes to a part he'd been playing for several years.
Actor Jonathan Kidd looks back over an amazing career, including voicing some iconic TV ads.
I don't know why there was a complaint, but the huge furore made sure that Ferrero Rocher was forever emblazoned, was ever stuck in everybody's head from then on, because everybody was looking for the commercial.
We're also remembering some classics of kids' TV.
Why don't you just switch off your television set and go out and do something less boring instead? Sitting at home, watch TV, turn it off, no good for me, etc., etc. And thank God it was changed for when I was on it. But that's the theme tune that everyone remembers, and that's the theme tune that was sung to me on most buses on the way to school and walking through town for a good couple of years after I finished.
That's Phil Noble, one of the original Liverpool gang, on Why Don't You? To come, we're behind the scenes on The Bill, meeting Wurzel Gummidge's real child star friend, spending time with Zippy and George from Rainbow, and going back to Wentworth with members of the original cast of Prisoner Cell Block H. These new shows and a 200-hour-plus back catalogue are available on Distinct Nostalgia. Search by scrolling up and down in the feed wherever you get your podcasts. A new year and a new season of shows on Distinct Nostalgia.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
So you did these, and there was only 13 of them. Were they all done at once over a period of time, or?
Yes. Well, the actual episodes, the actual stories, yes. I think it was kind of, well, probably once a week for 13 weeks. I don't quite remember. But as I say, in terms of the music, that was as a separate time altogether. So I think it took quite a while to get it all together into 13 distinct episodes.
And presumably you didn't see the animation until later, I presume. Is that right? We'd see the animation afterwards?
Well, if I remember this rightly, at the beginning, I tried to do it to the animation. They'd sort of done one or two episodes with the little arms and legs wiggling about and the little mouths opening. And it was so difficult to really match it all up. They decided in the end to scrap that plan altogether. And then I just recorded the episodes without seeing the figures. And then they modelled the figures' movements to what I did, which is actually easier.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I understand that. The great thing about them, though, and this is similar to a lot of the kids' shows at the time, they were what they called stop-frame animation, weren't they, rather than cartoons. And the great thing about that was that you always felt, I always felt as a kid that you could put your hand into the TV and bring them, you know, take them out and sort of hold them in a way. You know what I mean? They were real, weren't they? They were real.
Yes. I mean, I totally believed them.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. Obviously, the stories were all lovely and lovely, nice stories to tell. Just tell us a bit about that. I mean, you probably don't remember all the stories. There were quite a few stories, 13 stories. I know that, but what was it about it? You think that captured the imagination of the kids who watched it? Do you think back then?
Well, I think the children were very distinctive. But they were all loved each other. They were a very happy family. There was pure harmony everywhere, wasn't there? Mum and Dad obviously really liked each other. Grandpa was loved by everyone. I think it was a feeling of safety, security, and it was so gentle.
And a great theme tune. And the theme tune was brilliant.
A great theme tune, yes, indeed.
Yeah, if you listen to that now, you get a real earworm. It's in your head all day long if you listen to it.
Yes, I think, I mean, it was just a happy family. And, you know, really everyone would like that, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. What response did you get at the time? Do you remember?
None.
Really?
Absolutely none. Because, of course, all the listeners were under five. And so I had no idea if they were popular, the stories, or not, until I was in Les Miserables, which I was in for 3 years from 1988 to 91, playing Madame Thénardier. And we were, you know, sold out all the time, of course. I think it still is. And we would come out in between shows on a matinee day, both midweek and on Saturdays, and there'd be crowds and crowds of people at the stage door wanting our autographs, wanting to pose for photographs with us and so on. And we were doing that one day and somebody tapped me on the shoulder and I turned round and it was a young man. He must have been about, I don't know, 15 or 16. And I said, hello. And he said, Miss Soper, please, could you do me one of the voices of the Flumps? I said, yes, fine, okay. So I started doing Flumps voices, which I hadn't done for several years at that point. But, you know, once you've done them, really, you remember them forever. And suddenly there were all these other young people all crowding round saying, oh, we like the Flumps too. Oh, please do another one. And it was just so, I was amazed. And from then on, you know, it's happened that people say, oh, my God, you're the voice of the Flumps. And they say, that was part of my childhood. And it's just, I find it so touching and so, I just feel so happy to have made so many children have a nice time.
And it's taken on sort of a bit like a lot of these children's programmes, like Bagpuss and others. It's taken on a bit of a cult following, hasn't it, really? People love them.
I'm told. I mean, obviously, I'd be the last to know, but I believe so, yes. I don't think there's a Flumps convention yet, anyway. Perhaps there will be.
But I gather the music has been used in various things. I think it was used in an advert later on, wasn't it?
Yes, and I think there was probably illegally used, I dare say.
Probably.
To be honest. I mean, because the thing is, it was when we made those programmes, all of the kind of those sorts of rules and regulations had not really been put in place. It was actually, unbelievably, it was before videos really came in. Then I was asked if it would be all right if they put it all onto video. But they wanted to do such a lousy deal, I just said no. But in any case, I think Julie Holder, the author, likewise did not want this. Consequently, it never happened. So although you can get it on DVD, We've not given our permission and we don't get any money. It's a bit sort of scandalous, really. But what can you do about it? You know, you could go to court, but you probably wouldn't get anywhere.
Yeah, it was in that period, wasn't it, when, as you say, it was a bit of a wild west when it came to these kind of things in that sense.
It was, yes, I think that's a rather good expression.
And people were experimenting. But the great thing about the television of the 1970s and kids' TV of the 1970s was that it was also, in a way, experimental, wasn't it? But every, you know, people were trying their hand at all these different kinds of characters, and some flew and some didn't, but... You know, the Flumps obviously did very well. You know, I mean, you were talking about 13 episodes of the Flumps. I think there was only 13 episodes of Bagpuss as well, but they endured, you know.
Very likely, yes. Well, I think because, as you say, you remember it being on every year during your childhood. Well, it probably was, but it went round and round and round. So, you know, yes, you'd seen the episode of the balloons and then you saw it again, but you wouldn't have worried you. You would have thought, oh, I like that one. So, yeah, I don't think it was, you know, that was fairly standard, as you say, really.
Exactly, exactly. So then, as a bit of a treat then for our listeners, you touched on it a little bit earlier on, but give us a little bit of Pootle, if you can.
Well, I try to do Pootle, because he's only a baby. He's all stuffed up in his nose and he can't find his hanky. And he doesn't understand and he gets very cross about things.
How's that?
That was brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. So what did it do for your career?
Simply nothing. No, and I've got a voiceover agent now. And, you know, I never get a single job. They don't even want to know about me.
Oh.
Isn't that shocking? I think it's shocking.
Yes.
But still, what can you do?
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. And but you're still working. You're still doing lots of things, theatre and all that.
Yes, I'm in the Mousetrap at the moment in the West End. I'm playing a very different character from the Flumps. I'm playing the role of Mrs. Boyle. And Mrs. Boyle is an extremely unpleasant woman. And she gets very, very intolerant of absolutely everybody and everything. And she's very, very crisp with her words. So that's who I'm playing at the moment until May the 25th. They change the Mousetrap cast every 6 months.
Right, okay. It would be lovely if they ever thought about doing it, about bringing... I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I don't think...
Is Julie still with us?
I have no idea. She was a very, as I understood it, a very shy, retiring, lovely, I've no doubt, lovely lady, but she really didn't want any kind of, you know, spotlight on her.
Right, okay.
She never intended for this to become a professional thing. It was just that something she wrote for her children. And so I think that was one of the problems that... You know, they would have had to get her permission, I suppose, to perhaps write new episodes if she wasn't wanting to do so. I really don't know the answer.
It'd be lovely to trace the kids, wouldn't it? Their kids, and find out, you know, what their stories about the original Flumps.
Yeah, it would be. Well, their surname was Holder.
Yeah.
So maybe they might, if they're listening. Maybe, you never know. They might be able to. Get in touch with you.
But it holds special memories for you.
Oh, very much so. Yes, absolutely. I just think it's so lovely. It kind of happened almost by fluke because June Whitfield couldn't do it.
Yeah, she was busy doing Terry and June and all the rest of it, I presume.
Probably.
At that time.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fantastic. Lovely to talk to you again. I'm glad you're still working, still doing some great stuff. And
yes, I'm maybe old, but I'm still at it.
Well, thank you. And thank you very much indeed for bringing to life the Flumps.
You're most welcome. It's lovely to speak to you.
Gay Soper, who was the Flumps. Amazing to hear her voice. Such a massive part of our childhoods.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
And don't forget, there's more than 200 hours of interviews, reunions, quizzes, as well as new comedy, drama and panel shows on the Distinct Nostalgia podcast. Just scroll through our archive wherever you get your podcasts anytime. And if you've a suggestion for an interview or reunion, contact us at info@madeinmanchester.tv. Distinct Nostalgia is researched by Andrew Edwards and produced by Ashley Byrne. A Made in Manchester production.